Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Talking Markets podcast series on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Our conversation today will focus in on the investment landscape for gold, including an assessment of recent performance, a performance outlook, risk considerations, and more as it relates to the yellow metal. Joining me here today for the conversation at our 1285 podcast studio in New York, I'm glad to welcome from our partners at State Street Investment Management, Akash Doshi, Head of Gold Strategy. With that, Akash, thank you for dropping by the studio. Nice to be at the table with you. Looking forward to our conversation on gold.
Thanks, Dan.
So to begin, let's stick with what's happening in the markets, what's driving current events, and that's highly geopolitically driven at the moment. The U.S.-Iran conflict, which remains ongoing, has been disruptive to global markets, broadly speaking. Though, I'm curious, how has gold fared over the past couple of months?
How gold has fared has been a tale of almost two halves during the first quarter of this year. In January and February, you saw prices really rally to record levels. You saw record inflows across the U.S. listed gold ETF sector for both January and February combined seasonally. And then March was a bit of an unwind. We saw prices fall the most since the depths of the global financial crisis in 2008. Those record inflows seasonally that I was talking about in January and February became record outflows in dollar notional terms, with over $12.8 billion of outflows just in March. But I think the market has started to absorb some of the conflict effects, and you're starting to see inflows in April of 2026, similar to the pace that we saw in February, which was pre-war. And really, I think the market is kind of figuring out what is happening with oil prices, energy costs, and the inflation impulse. And is that a short-term headwind for gold, or is that a short-term tailwind? I think gold still got a geopolitical bid in March, but the overwhelming negative force behind the unwind was a confluence of factors, almost a perfect storm. You had profit-taking, gold being used as a liquidity sleeve to raise cash for margin calls in other asset markets. And a lot of the tailwinds that we saw, particularly in February, lower real yields, a weaker dollar, and so forth, that kind of unwound in March. You started to see a stronger dollar. You saw the Fed becoming potentially more hawkish in short-term interest rate markets. I think it sold off a little bit too aggressively in March. I think April, we're starting to see the market stabilize. Investors have bought the dip. And of course, how the evolution of energy prices progress will affect gold, not directly, but indirectly through the Fed dollar transmission mechanism.
Would it be fair to say that the price action we've seen over the past couple of months, a bit of an overreaction?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. If you look at what gold has done in March, that was following what was probably too strong a performance in January in particular. The precious metals markets have been very volatile in 2026, historically so. So I think that volatility on the way up became volatility on the way down. The markets ended up buying the dip around $4,100 an ounce. The gold market now seems comfortable in the State Street Investment Management base case range, which is around $4,750 to $5,500 an ounce over the next 9 to 12 months. And within that context, like I said earlier, Dan, we are starting to see inflows again. I think the market also in the interest rate space probably got a little too aggressive on Fed hawkishness. Right before the war, Dan, markets were pricing in about 58 basis points of cumulative easing from the Fed in 2026. By the third week of March, the market was pricing in 50-50 odds of a Fed hike. Hmm. That's pretty rapid repricing of the Fed framework and outlook in just a three-week period. I think now it's a little bit normalized. The Fed might be on hold for longer, but hikes are at least off the table. So I think gold is getting a little bit of a reprieve there.
And with that, investors may start treating it again as a safe haven asset, so to speak, flocking to gold, just given the ongoing geopolitical uncertainty we're facing.
Absolutely. I think gold will resume some of its safe haven and geopolitical tail hedge properties. And I would argue also, Dan, that perhaps the war exacerbates some of the structural themes and tailwinds that have really been boosting gold over the last couple of years in this bull cycle the precious metals market has been on since late 2023. And what do I mean by that? Well, first and foremost is the war inflationary or is it deflationary? This looks like a supply shock on the oil side. It's proving at least temporarily inflationary. And yes, that does hurt gold through the Fed transmission mechanism. But what else does it do? Well, it increases geopolitical fragmentation. That's something that can help gold. Two, it potentially worsens the fiscal debt loads across developed economies and emerging market economies. You have several economies right now providing energy subsidies and price subsidies. That will exacerbate the debt and deficit impulse that we're seeing. And I think that's one of the strongest reasons to be invested in gold right now. And I think, say, third, yes, gold had a very bad month in March. Mm-hmm. It's rebounding in April. However, what else lost in March? Bonds. And the 60-40 portfolio was also negative in March. And I think that leads to a third theme, that stock-bond correlations still remain historically elevated here. We saw yet again that bonds, and particularly government bonds and long-duration exposure, was not the safe haven reprieve for our investors in March either. So again, it's some of those structural cases for gold actually might be exacerbated or even accentuated by this conflict.
What other regions perhaps have stepped in? What have you been picking up on as buyers to take advantage of the recent price action?
That's a great question. And I would say the outflows, if they were driven by Western investors due to profit taking, have been at least semi-buffered by Eastern inflows, and particularly out of China. So I mentioned that year-to-date, the gold market is probably flat on inflows. January and February were very strong. March was very weak. April, you're seeing a modest rebound. China has continued to buy the dip. They have seen $8 billion of ETF inflows for gold in the first 3 months of this year. This People's Bank of China, its central bank, has now reported 16 consecutive months of net purchases for its own reserves. And not to get too much into the weeds, Dan, but technical indicators like onshore price premiums, meaning the price of Chinese gold vis-a-vis the world spot price, have increased, particularly during the March conflict, to the highest levels we've seen in a year, which potentially foreshadows some more demand for gold. So yes, I think what the Chinese buying shows is that gold is a global fungible commodity asset. Yes, the Fed matters. Yes, the US dollar matters. Yes, risk on, risk off matters. But that's not the only driver. And I think Chinese buying in particular really helps display that.
So we've seen a bit of a turnaround with buyer demand. Where do you see the outlook going from here? And any risk considerations that could perhaps further weaken demand?
Yeah, look, our base case remains $4,750 to $5,500 an ounce. We assign a 50% probability at State Street Investment Management for that outlook over the next 9 to 12 months. But we still assign a higher bullish risk skew for gold versus a bearish risk skew. So what is that bullish risk? We still think there's about a 30% chance that prices can break above $6,000 an ounce over the next year, get as high as $6,250 in our bull case scenario. And we assign a 20% bear case probability that gold prices trade as low as $4,000 an ounce in the next 12 months. We really do think, Dan, that $4,000 an ounce is a new support level because the conflict does not change the structural themes of global debt and demand for alternative fiat. It doesn't change the themes of elevated U.S. stock bond correlations. And three, I would argue it accelerates the geopolitical fragmentation story that is also likely to propel more central bank demand for gold over time, not in the very short term, but over the medium term.
Akash, very generous with your time, sharing your insights with our listeners, our clients. Thank you very much for dropping by the Talking Markets podcast series here on UBS On Air Market Moves.
Always my pleasure. Thanks, Dan.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliates. The views and opinions expressed in this material by external guest speakers are those of the author, speaker, and are not those of UBS, its subsidiaries, or affiliates. Accordingly, UBS does not accept any liability over the content of this material or any claims, losses, or damages arising from the use or reliance of all or any part thereof. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.